How's everybody doing? Michael's out of town, so you're stuck with me. So I'm sorry, and I'm also happy all at the same time. But we're thankful for those of you who are here, and especially our visitors this morning. We appreciate you being here. And this morning we're going to begin something that I'm going to conclude tonight, I'm going to finish tonight, in the series that I'm calling, Do I Believe Jesus? This quarter, the third quarter of the year, our emphasis is on the callings and the teachings of Jesus. And we could talk about a billion things when it comes to the teachings of Jesus. But this morning I want us to ask the question, do I really believe Jesus when he says this? I'm going to begin with one that I bet right off the front, almost everyone in the religious world agrees with this. In Mark chapter 14, Jesus is eating the Last Supper with his disciples. And he says this. He says, the Son of Man indeed goes just as it's written of him. But woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had never been born. I bet every single one of us would say, yeah, that's right. Judas messed up. Judas would have been off a lot better if he had never been born. Can I get up? We agree on that, right? You know what happens? Religious world, we agree on one thing, but then we pop up another statement that Jesus says in Mark chapter 16 and verse 16. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. But he who does not believe will be condemned. Well, now we got a little interesting thing here. Jesus isn't really saying that, or that's really not in the scriptures, or do I believe Jesus? These two really epitomize the real struggle that goes on in your life and in my life. Where there are things that I like that Jesus says, and there are things I don't like what Jesus says. This morning, we're going to be looking at the things that we probably don't like. You may like them. I don't like them. Tonight, we're going to be looking at the things that we like that he says, the kind of the positives in this way. But as we begin this morning, if you want to turn to Matthew chapter 18, and if I can get my volunteers to come up at this time, I will appreciate that. So if you'll turn to Matthew 18, Matthew 18, the disciples are arguing who's the greatest. And Jesus says this. He calls to himself children in verse 2. And he says this. Truly I say to you, unless you become converted and become like children, you'll not enter the kingdom of heaven. Poor Jesus' disciple that day, right? I can point to you guys. We know what it's like to be these children. Some of you are their parents. You know how innocent they are. Sometimes they get a little sassy. But really, they're innocent. They depend on you in so many ways, don't they? You recognize that. That's what we have to be if we're going to enter the kingdom. But notice verse 5. Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. We like that one, don't we? Man, I take this child in, I love you guys, and I'm going to feed you and all this. Jesus is saying, you've received me, you've taken me in. So now verse 6. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him to have a heavy millstone hung around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea. Now how do we feel? Parents, you can look at them. It's a different story now, isn't it? Because these innocent children will have blocks thrown in their way to to try to keep them from doing the right thing. And the one who causes them to fall, it's better off for them to be dead. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. We're not talking about little things, are we? We're talking life and death to the point where he says, it'd be better for you if you were put to death. And that's the idea of the millstone hung around the neck. Is that was one of their forms of capital punishment. You throw a cinder block around the neck, you drop them into the sea, guess what? You're sinking to the bottom and you're done. But this millstone was a stone at the grinding mill that a beast of burden, an animal, had to turn. That it was so strong that a human, he wasn't asked to do it. This was for an animal. Woe to him who causes these little ones. Or as Mark would say, and as Luke would say, another one to stop. We're not talking about just one time Jesus says this. And as the teacher would say, if I repeat it, it's important and it's going to be on the test. For this statement to be in all three Gospels that are synonymous, that talk about the same thing, shouldn't that tell us about how important Jesus thinks about this? It's very important. But you say, man, how can I do this? Man, I would never take a block, and my kid's trying to get around, I never put something intentionally in his way to trip him over. We never do that, right? No, we wouldn't. But you know what does and what can trip him up? Hypocrisy. You know how many parents say, oh, love God. Oh, go to church. Oh, God's the most important thing in your life. And you know what the kid hears? What about you, Mom? What about you, Dad? They hear it, but they don't see it. And so they grow up. And they sit there. And they're hearing, God's got to be the most important thing in my life. But they don't see it. Does that excuse the child or the adult who doesn't do the right thing? In no way does it excuse him. But I have a part in this responsibility. You know what else frustrates people and causes them to stumble? Say they've got a problem in their life. Look at Matthew chapter 7. And man, I tell you, if I've heard this phrase 1,000 times, I've heard it 1,000,000,000. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 7, verse 1, do not judge so that you will not be judged. For the way you judge, you will be judged, and by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. Jesus isn't saying don't judge. He's telling us how to judge. You judge the way you want to be judged, because that's what's going to happen to you. So we got somebody, they've done something wrong. It's obvious. But there's a little speck, as Jesus calls it, verse 3. He says, why do you look at the speck that's in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, and behold, the log is in your own eye? Here, let me fix you. I see that tiny little speck in your eye. Hey, by the way, if I get a speck in my eye, can you see it unless I tell you, hey, there's a speck in my eye? No. But can we all see the log is sticking out? Yep. Well, I can't if I got my glasses on. I can see it. But it's obvious. It's obvious to everyone else but the person. And it's me who's got the log sticking out of my eye that I go up to you and I got to get a microscope or a magnifying glass to even find a problem that you have. And I expect you to listen to me. That's my fault. The speck needs to get out. Take the log out first so you can see clearly to take the speck out. Both need to come out. But man, be careful when we go and we're talking to folks to make sure we don't have a log sticking out of our eye. Because if I go as a hypocrite, they're stunned. They're not going to go. Okay, so a hypocrite, fine. What about, how might I cause somebody to stumble by inactivity or complacency? What do I mean by inactivity or complacency? I mean, I'm just not doing anything anymore. I look at James, and James says in James chapter 4 and verse 17, he who knows to do the right thing and doesn't do it, to him it is sin. Alright? I'm a new Christian. I'm sitting down and I'm reading the scriptures. And I'm reading the scriptures every day. And I'm coming across stuff all the time. And I see, okay, this is what I need to do. So then I come into church on Sunday. And I look around. And nobody else is doing it. So, well, maybe it's not that important. You go back and you read something else. Now I need to do that. Go to church. And nobody's doing it. It must not really be that important. And so they know what to do, but they say, I'm not going to do it. Are they responsible for not doing it? He who knows to do the right thing and doesn't do it, to him it's sin? Yes. But what about the people who aren't doing anything? That have caused him to think that it's okay not to do it. They caused him to stumble. Or the one that we talk about the most obvious maybe for men, is when someone is dressed immodestly. And we know in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 9, that the women are to dress modestly, professing godliness and good works. But have you ever stopped to think about what I'm wearing today? Now, I'm sure there are times, remember we said we wouldn't call someone to stumble intentionally? I'm sure there are people who, when they decide what they're going to wear one night, they decide, man, he's really going to be attracted to this portion of my body. You got something in mind of why you're putting this on or whatever the case may be, and it's not your husband. It's your boyfriend. Or it's some guy at work. Or it's a classmate. But I'm thinking about them. Man, they're really going to like the way I look. And as a man, you know what I can attest to? I see it and I get your point. And I've just stumbled. It's interesting to me that we don't want to think about that. We don't want to say, well, what I wear can actually affect somebody else. That's on them. They shouldn't have thought that, right? You shouldn't have put the block in their way to think about it. You can be completely covered up and a man still might lust after you. He still might think in wrong thoughts, right? But I tell you what, if you're not wearing much, you're saying, hey, house is open. Look at it. It's better for all of these. Have a millstone hung around their neck and thrown off a cliff. I don't think any of us today, if our options are live or, hey, have a big piece of concrete tied around your neck and dropped off a cliff, we would say, hey, give me that big piece of concrete and let me drop off a cliff. But our lives say, saying, how you drop me off the cliff. Second, I've been torn which side to go to here. I'm going to Matthew 18 or I'm going to Mark 9. They both say the same thing. They want to go to Mark chapter 9 to see it. But I want to introduce this idea in Mark chapter 9 by this way. We've all been watching movies. I'm assuming everyone in here has watched the movie And you maybe even watched a scary movie. And you're watching the movie, and you can see what's about to happen. The music starts getting all creepy, and the music starts getting like, whatever the music is, when they're about to go into a creepy house, right? You know what's going to happen when they go in the house, right? The dude is standing around the corner, he's got his axe pulled, and as soon as they walk in the door, axe goes down, off goes your head, and you say, why did you go in there? And we're shouting at the TV, don't go in there, don't go in there. You know what Jesus is shouting at us? Pick up with me in verse 42 of Mark chapter 9. Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe to stumble, it would be better for him if a heavy millstone were hung around his neck and he had been cast into the sea. If your hand causes you to stumble. We're now talking about, we're not talking about anyone else who's causing you to stumble anymore. We just dealt with them. Better for them to be dropped off in the sea. Now, if your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life crippled than having two hands to go into hell, into the unquenchable fire, where their worm does not die and their fire is not quenched. And if your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. It's better for you to enter life lame than having 2 feet to be cast into hell, where their worm does not die and their fire is not quenched. And if your eye causes you to stumble, throw it out. It is better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye than having 2 eyes to be cast into hell, where their worm does not die and their fire is not quenched. What if I walked in Sunday night or Wednesday morning? And I've got this on my face. You might say, Wes, when did you turn into a pirate? Well, this week, right? You would be like, Wes, what happened? I said, well, I was looking at too much pornography. And so I decided I was going to take my eyes. What would you think about the person who was willing to go to that length? So they wouldn't lose their soul. Isn't that what Jesus is saying? It's better to go through life with difficulties than it is to go into hell completely well. You know who it's on? It's my responsibility. When that woman is dressed immodestly, and that stumbling block is there, it's my responsibility to see it and not stumble over it. When my temptation is to lie, I need to see that as a stumbling block and tell the truth. That's on me. So I have to ask myself a question. Do I believe Jesus when he says it's better to go through life without my eyes? Or without my feet, or without my tongue, than it is to go into the unquenchable fire where the enemies of God are constantly burning and there are enough dead corpses that the worm always has enough to eat. Now again, is Jesus talking literal here? Maybe not. I don't believe so. But I tell you what, if someone took it to the point where their eyes are causing them to sin, they plucked them out, I'd say that is great faith. That is somebody who is trying their best. So I have to ask myself a question. What measures am I taking in my life to cut the sin out? Jesus mentions this again in Matthew chapter 6, specifically with sexual immorality. And with adultery. But you know, say you're sleeping with your boyfriend or your girlfriend, right? And you know you got a tendency of doing that. You get alone, and the next thing you know, man, we're doing things we shouldn't be doing. What's a measure you can take to keep from doing that? You ever thought about not being alone? You ever thought about setting up some kind of barrier, some kind of rules of we're going to... Man, it just keeps happening. I can't do anything about it. Yeah, you can. But you don't want to do anything about it because they might get mad at you. It's going to be hard. Boys, and I was a teenage boy, and I'm a man, and so I know the difficulties and the struggles of this. What am I doing with my internet consumption that is protecting me from getting into this? I personally pay $9 a month so that everything that I look at online is sent to someone else. They know what I've looked at. That's between me and them. That's been a great $9 investment per month. I've known people who have got rid of their computers, or they've got rid of the internet, or they've got rid of their TV because of their sin. What am I doing? Well, you might say, I don't have a problem with sexual things. Okay, great. They got a problem to lie. What kind of measures can you take in now to say, you know what, I need to work on this so that I'm not going to lie? How about every time I tell a lie, I got to put a dollar up somewhere and I got to tell somebody that I did it? How about the person I lied to? But there are various things, but here's one I want to think about, our pride. Man, how in the world am I going to cut my pride out? I got a tendency to look down on you because of the things you do in your life. And I got a tendency to think, man, I'm so much better than everybody else. You know what? It's going to happen to that person. The one who humbles or the one who exalts himself will be humble. But the one who humbles himself will be exalted. You ever thought about going down a list of things that you think that you're good at and maybe you are good at? And said, you know what? So-and-so, brother so-and-so, or sister so-and-so is better at this than me. Or brother so-and-so, man, he does this just as good, if not better than I do. To the point where I don't think that I'm the most important anymore. I'm not the best. I've looked and I've said, man, somebody else can do the same thing that I do just as well, if not better. I had to humble myself and do it. There are various other things that we can talk about. But do I believe Jesus? He says it's better to have some difficulty in my life now than to have an all eternity roasting the eternal fire of the enemies of God. Thirdly, and finally, we have two more passages here. And they're two different ideas, but they have one concept. It's if your brother does dot, 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 this is how you ought to react. Now, let's look at this from Luke's account, Luke chapter 17. And by the way, if you notice and you're taking notes, you'd see that all four of these things are talked about in Matthew chapter 18. So if you want to go back home and you want to read Matthew chapter 18, that would be a good one. To go back and read. But in Luke chapter 17, again, notice it's in the same kind of context. Verse 1 says, it's inevitable that stumbling blocks come, but woe to the one through whom they come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea than the one who would cause one of these little ones to stumble. But now here's our new one in verse 3. Be on your guard. If your brother sins, rebuke him. And if he repents, forgive him. Here's our situation. Brother sins against me. Sister sins against me. What's my responsibility? Tell them. Is that fun? Is that easy? You know what our tendency is? I'll go tell my friend. Man, you will not believe what so-and-so did with me. How dare they do that? You know who I never say a word to? So-and-so. I don't talk to them. I'd rather them rot in hell because they don't know that they wronged me. Then take the courage to go and say, you've done me wrong. Matthew 18 and verse 15 says, go and tell them between you and him alone. If he hears you, then you've gained your brother. It's my responsibility when I've been wronged by a brother or sister to go and tell them. The question I have to ask myself is, do I have that courage? Those are uncomfortable conversations. Those are painful conversations. But they're conversations that if I believe Jesus, they've got to take place. So you go to them, you muster up enough courage, you work through it, you've lost enough sleep at night, then finally you said, man, I've got to go and I've got to tell them. And they hear you. Then he repents, forgive him. That may actually be harder. Because that means I got to get past whatever it was. The getting it off my chest, in one sense, makes me feel better. I told you, you admit you're wrong. And you kind of, maybe inside, you kind of hope they don't repent. Because then, man, I got to take them back. Michael spent a whole Sunday morning talking about this whole idea of forgiveness. But do you realize, and I'm sure that you do, that forgiving others when they deserve forgiveness, hence when they've repented, that really hinges, my forgiveness hinges upon them. Go to Matthew 18, and I'm not going to read this parable. I'm going to summarize this parable. But Jesus goes on when he is talking about this. In Matthew 18, you remember in verse 15, he says, if your brother sins you, go again. Go to him, tell him between you and him alone. If he hears you, you've gained a brother. But if he does not hear you, take one or two others with you. And if he doesn't hear them, then take it before the church. Alright? That's your process if somebody has wronged you. They sinned against you. They repented. Brother comes back, he's wronged the whole congregation. He hasn't lived the way he's supposed to do. It's obvious he's done wrong and he's sorry that he's done the wrong. So he comes up here in just a moment and he says, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done it. But he comes back next Sunday and it's like, man, he's got a plague on him. Like he's got a disease. If we get anywhere close to him, if we touch him, we're going to get it too. Have we forgiven our brother? We're holding him. Now, there may be consequences. I've got to forgive him. I've got to get past it as best I can. Because, here's that parable. Jesus tells a parable about the guy, and he owes a huge amount of money, right? And he goes to the guy that he owes it to, and he begs. And he says, hey, cut me some slack. Come, I can't pay you back. The man had mercy and compassion on him. And he let him go. Well, that one that was let go, right? He had a guy who owed him some money, and not a whole lot. Enough that the guy could pay back over time. And the man that owes him money, he comes to him and he says, hey, falls down on his knees, cut me some slack, have mercy on me. Nope. Go into prison and work it off, and then when you've paid your debt, come on out. The observers were looking around and they said, something's not right about this picture. Why didn't that guy do it? So they go and they tell the master who forgave him the first debt, you won't believe what so-and-so did. So So-and-so calls him in. You know what he does? Binds him hand and foot, carries him into prison. Takes back that debt until he can pay it back, and he'll never, ever, ever be able to pay back the debt. And Jesus tells us the point of the parable at the end of Matthew chapter 18 and verse 34. His Lord, moved with anger, handed him over to the torturers until he should repay all that he owed. My heavenly Father will also do the same to you if each of you does not forgive his brother from your heart. We're not talking about empty words of I forgive you. We're talking about words of heart, of action, of where I've forgiven them because they changed. Can God forgive me? Or is there a brother or sister who's repented and they've asked for forgiveness and I've not forgiven? And I've been harboring this anger and this bitterness and all of this. Do I really think that God is going to forgive me? It's the question I ask this morning as we close. You see how the Lord was angry at how he treated this other one? I'll take one step back and go back to our little children. Imagine they're up here. I'm pointing at them like they're up here, but imagine they're up here. That's your child, all right? Somebody in this room did something harmful to your child. They intentionally made them stumble. And your child stumbled. Your child did the wrong thing. Who are you mad at? That both, aren't you? Because your child knew better. You taught them, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. You know better. You know what God said. And they still did it anyway. But who are you more angry with? The one who did it to my child. That's God. When he looks down and he sees how we treat one another. He's frustrated. He gets angry. He said, man, don't make them fall. Forgive them. Take care of yourself. Am I doing anything about what Jesus says? If I believe him, am I doing anything about it? I know I got work to do. I'm assuming you do too. May we have the courage that is necessary and the belief to carry out what our Lord asks of us. Tonight we're going to be looking at faith and what Jesus says about faith. Over the next several weeks we're going to be talking a good bit about faith when it comes to me. That's where a lot of my focus is going to be. If you're subject to the invitation anyway, we'd ask that you come now as we stand and as we stand.